I'm Tremper Longman. I'm distinguished scholar and professor emeritus of biblical studies at Westmont College in Santa Barbara, California, though I live in Alexandria, Virginia, and I'm the author of Revelation Through Old Testament Eyes.
Tremper, great to see you again.
Yes, David, good to see you too.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think it's been almost a whole year since we had a chance to visit, but it's great to see you, and thanks for being with us today on the Stone Chapel.
Oh, it's my pleasure and privilege. Thanks.
This is a fun podcast to do, in part because I learn so very much when I'm talking to people about these things. And we're going to talk about your book, Revelation Through Old Testament Eyes, in a few minutes. But for those who don't know Tremper Longman, who is Dr. Tremper Longman?
Well, Dr. Tremper Longman is the husband of Alice Longman, the father of three sons and the grandfather of eight grandchildren, seven girls and one boy, and longtime professor of Old Testament studies and author of various books, usually connected to the Old Testament, as is this one on Revelation through Old Testament.
It is.
Yeah, so I have a lot of interest in biblical studies, but also in movies and television and good restaurants.
Good food, yes.
Good
and
food, yeah.
And you live in a city. You live near Washington, D.C., so you probably get some pretty good food around there, right?
Absolutely. We just made reservations for my 70th birthday party, which is coming up in September.
Are you serious? No, man, you look like you're 45. Come on.
Oh, well,
come
you're
on.
You're too kind.
You and I both have a little too much gray to be able to pull that off anymore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at a place called the Inn at Little Washington, which if you Google it, you'll see it's like a 2 or 3 Michelin star restaurant, but you have to stay there in order to eat there.
So. Okay, so you got to spend the night there. Well, I hope that's a great, great, great birthday. Yeah.
Thank
well, listen,
you.
You're the author of this new book, and it's come out recently called Revelation Through Old Testament Eyes. It's published by Craigle Academic, and it's part of a series of books that I want you to describe in just a minute. In particular, to some degree, the title Revelation Through Old Testament Eyes tells a lot about the series, yeah. Right? So how did you envision, you're an Old Testament scholar, and you're writing about the book of Revelation, the last book in the New Testament, also known as the Apocalypse, sometimes it's called that, but through Old Testament eyes. So tell us how that came about.
Sure. So Andy LePoe, who is the editor, was a longtime editor at InterVarsity Press, whom I knew for many years, though I worked with another editor, Dan Reed, more directly, typically. But Andy, when he retired from InterVarsity, put together this great, what I think is a great idea for a commentary series where authors will write about the New Testament book, but the main emphasis is bringing out the Old Testament themes and background to the book. And since I had an early choice, I thought Revelation would be the right book for me to do, partly because even though it, in one sense, never quotes the Old Testament, it's just chock full of Old Testament allusions, themes, metaphors, etc., that are really important to understand the book. And I'd done a lot of work on Daniel beforehand, and Daniel's one of the books that particularly informs the book of Revelation and is the same type of book, that is, it's an apocalyptic book. So I thought that was the best choice for me, and I'm really glad I did it, because I learned an awful lot.
I was wondering about that, and I've done the same thing. I'm working on another book in the series called Matthew Through Old Testament Eyes.
Yeah.
Which, and I didn't realize I didn't have the first choice, so I would have chosen maybe Philemon Through Old Testament Eyes, a really short one.
Right.
But this is, 28 chapters in Matthew. You had 22 two chapters
in
the book of Revelation, and it's telling this amazing story and such. But you've learned a lot through this, not only, I guess, about the book of Revelation, but also how the writer wove together these themes from the Old Testament, from Daniel and Ezekiel and Zechariah, and it seems like a lot of other places as well.
Yeah. In the book, I have some essays that, you know, I go through section by section, all 22 chapters, but I also have some different types of essays, which include some synthetic essays, which says Book of Exodus and Exodus in the Book of Revelation, or Psalms in the Book of Revelation. So those two books, Daniel, Ezekiel, and Zechariah, as you say, in particular, are very provide a kind of robust background to the book of Revelation. And by the way, Matthew is another one of those great books. Another reason it's not only long, it's also particularly permeated with Old Testament texts. So that was a great one. Really look forward to seeing your commentary on that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well, getting it finished. But I mean, I've learned a lot through it as well, as you know. Now, is this a verse by verse treatment? You talked about it as a commentary. Is it a verse by verse treatment?
Yeah, it's pretty much verse by verse, or section by section. But there are also introductions that try to keep the narrative continuity of the book in mind as well. You got to be a little careful with the verse by verse thing, as if it's proof text or something. I think there are comments on virtually every verse in the book of Revelation because of the fact that the Old Testament so permeates book as a whole.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, it's just chock full of those things, right?
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah,
it is. Right. It's just full of those things. Let's talk specifically about one or two passages that you think are really robust in that way of bringing out the Old Testament kind of themes and ideas and bringing those to the front and foreground for these early Christians, many of whom were suffering some sort of persecution. Either active,
absolutely,
or there were rumors of it, and it was close enough to get everybody sweating and upset and concerned. And some people apparently had even, you know, been martyred. That passage there in early in the book where it talks about, you know, how much longer, O Lord, right? And there's more martyrs to come. So what are a couple that just strike you? I know I've got two or three that I could throw out there, but what are a couple of places that you find just very enriched by reading it through Old Testament eyes?
Yeah, absolutely. If I may, before I go to a particular passage,
Sure. Maybe
just start with that connection with the book of Daniel, and which might be signaled by the very opening of Revelation 1:1, which says the revelation from Jesus Christ. And as you know, the Greek word there is apokalypsis, which gives the genre of apocalyptic its name. So Revelation and books like Revelation are often called apocalyptic. And in the Bible, the other main apocalyptic book is Daniel, which, as we've already said, kind of informs many parts of the book of Daniel. I'm going to turn to one in just a second. But I think it's also the theme of the book of Daniel is also the theme of the book of Revelation, which gets at something you were just saying about the setting and time of persecution, marginalization, humiliation of Christians. And both of these books are presenting pictures that are informing those marginalized, oppressed, persecuted believers, whether it's in the Old Testament time or New Testament time, that, you know, even though it looks like evil's in control, God's the one who's really in control. And he's going to have the final victory. So what the message of these books is to their contemporary audiences is you should stay faithful. You should stay, in spite of the marginalization, humiliation, you stay faithful in your relationship to God because he will have the final victory. And I actually think that these books have particularly relevance for today, where Christians are feeling marginalized, humiliated, And so forth, and maybe responding inappropriately as opposed to hearing that message of stay faithful. You know what? You are going to be marginalized and humiliated.
Yeah, Jesus said to his earliest followers, you know, you're going to be persecuted. You're going to go through this together.
Right.
So right. This is not anything surprising in a way.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought in terms of specific passages, just mention a couple of the pictures we get of Jesus's return. And the first one is in chapter 1, where Daniel and Zechariah are being kind of woven together here in Revelation 1, verse 7, where it says, "Look, he's coming with the clouds, and every eye will see him, even those who pierced him. And all peoples on earth will mourn because of him. So shall it be. Amen." And it's this picture of Jesus coming on the clouds, which you encounter in the Old Testament when God comes to rescue his people. He's envisioned as riding on a cloud. And the most direct connection is with Daniel chapter 7, where one like the Son of Man rides a cloud into the presence of day and then goes out and defeats the beast. But there are a number of other places in the Old Testament, like Nahum 1, Isaiah 19, Psalm 68, Psalm 104, and we could go on. Mm-hmm. And that image itself is derived from ancient Near Eastern imagery of storm god imagery. Not that it's saying these storm gods are real or anything, but it's just using storm god imagery to talk about God's power. And of course, Daniel 7 in particular is at the end of the Old Testament time period when the people are living under Babylonian, then Persian, etc., oppression. And the idea is God will come in the future to save you. And when Jesus comes, of course, John the Baptist talks about how one's coming after me, who will burn the chaff with unquenchable fire, who will chop the wood, the rotten wood. And then Jesus goes out and starts healing everybody and preaching the good news and that. And John in Matthew 11, in my understanding of that, when he sends the two disciples up to Jesus and says, "Are you the one, or are we going to expect another?" is kind of like, where's the axe chopping?
And yeah, that's true.
Fire burning. And I think what Jesus says in response and what the Gospels tell us is that John didn't really understand that there were two comings of Christ and that this picture of Christ coming on the cloud at the second coming means that he is coming to rescue his people and judge those who persecute him.
Yeah, that's a beautiful passage, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Look, he is coming with the clouds. Every eye will see him.
Yeah,
you know, right. There's some talk about a kind of a secret rapture, and I'm just curious, you know, that not everybody's going to see it. Some people will not see it. How do you see that fitting in, or does it fit in, or, I mean, because every eye will see him, that seems pretty clear.
Yeah, so the picture we're getting here and throughout the book of Revelation, I don't think is giving us kind of like a literal description that Jesus is actually going to ride a cloud back, because I'm hoping to take a look in a moment at a second description of his return, which is a different metaphor. So I think that we need to be mindful that how this plays out in reality in the future. We know it's going to happen in the future. Jesus is going to come again.
Right.
But exactly how he's going to make his presence known, I think we have to keep an open mind about.
Yeah, I think part of what you're describing here, and we have a tendency to read these texts very literally and to say, well, I want a literal sort of picture of this, and that's what I expect. But in fact, there's a lot of metaphor here, a lot of symbolism, a lot of imagery that's birthed in the Old Testament.
Yes.
That is used to sort of buttress what's going on here. So what's that other passage that describes the second coming differently?
Well, I mean, Revelation 19:11 and following.
Okay.
Says, "I saw heaven standing open, and there before me was a white horse whose rider is called Faithful and True." So this picture is of Jesus riding a horse. "With justice he judges and wages war. His eyes are like blazing fire, and on his head are many crowns." Now, one of the reasons why I'm attracted to talk about this passage is that there are all these micro allusions to various passages in the Old Testament from Psalms and Deuteronomy and Ezekiel and so forth, all which are describing Yahweh as a warrior coming to save his people, that are now being applied to Jesus. You know, it goes on, he has a name written on him that no one knows but he himself. He's dressed in a robe dipped in blood, and his name is the Word of God. The armies of heaven were following him, riding on white horses and dressed in fine linen, white and clean. Coming out of his mouth is a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations. He will rule them with an iron scepter. He treads the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God Almighty. On his robe and on his thigh, he has this name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I mean, it's just such a powerful...
It's a powerful picture.
...description of Jesus' return to bring judgment against evil, which, you know, a lot of people read Revelation and they go, this book scares me.
Exactly. Yeah.
This book is disturbing to me.
When we were doing a book that we together called Rediscovering Jesus, when we come to the book of Revelation, it called it the scary Jesus. You know, there's a scary, you know, you got the sweet Jesus kind of the Gospels at times.
Yeah.
But then this is a scary image.
Right.
That we're reading about here.
Yeah. But you'll probably agree with me that Christians are not the ones who should be scared of it.
No, that's right. Yeah, no, Christians shouldn't be. But it's a picture of power, though, isn't it? You know, it's a picture of power,
and that
judgment is coming. That judgment will be swift. That judgment will be complete.
Yes.
And those who are on the wrong side, those are the ones who need to fear.
So I became a Christian my senior year in high school, and I will admit this, and that a girl gave me a copy of The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey, which of course is talking about the second coming.
Yeah.
And I totally disown Lindsey's hermeneutic on the book of Revelation, but he got one thing right, which is Jesus is coming again. And I was on the wrong side of that divide. So I think this is an important message that intends to actually comfort Christians while also encouraging non-Christians to come over on God's side.
Yeah, move to the right side of things, right?
And that is
God's side, no doubt. Well, it's a terrific book. It's called Revelation Through Old Testament Eyes. It's by Tremper Longman III. It's in the series that is edited by Andy LePoe called Through Old Testament Eyes, the series. And it's a commentary, but there's also a lot of great background to it. It's, if you're really interested in the book of Revelation and how it works and how it functions, this is a terrific book to pick up and read. So we want to encourage people to do that. Tremper, thanks for being with us today on The Stone Chapel.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate it.
Thanks to Janet Seifert and Kathy Capes for helping us produce this podcast. Jocelyn Solis is responsible for promoting the Stone Chapel podcast on all of our social media. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Foundation. If you have questions or comments or just want to be in touch, email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. That's podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.